John Stapleton grew up on a small farm near Strokestown in Roscommon. And after going to college in Dublin and then England, the then young food scientist happened to meet a stockbroker with a passion for fresh soup. Back then in the 80s, soup either came dried in a packet or in a tin can. And together they formed a business which pioneered fresh soup in cartons, and they built a multi-million pound brand. Well, John later went on to co-found Little Dish, which made a company that made fresh additive-free meals for toddlers, which was another success. And today he lives in Germany and works as a mentor and investor in food startups, including through the BIA Innovator Hub in Athenry in Galway, where food businesses can take their first steps into the market. I'm delighted to say John joins me this morning from Munich. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Ella. That's a fantastic introduction. I'm going to use that in the future. That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Well, most importantly, is your mother listening from Roscommon this morning?
I don't know for sure. I'll let her know. She may not. It may be a little too early for her, but it should definitely get a recording, I guess, at some point. But yeah, she should be listening. She should be listening.
Your success back in the 1980s in the soup market came about because of two things. I mean, you had the scientific know-how. Your business partner had the access to cash and a business drive. And together you invented something, and I suppose you'd call it a sort of market disruptor. It reminded me of the story of Tato Crisps and how Joe Spud Murphy and then his employee Seamus Burke, a bit like yourself, was the one, and they invented the first pre-flavoured crisps. I just wonder, it's quite a high bar, but is that really where the magic can happen for a food business startup, to come up with an entirely new product category?
Yeah, the thing about the food industry is that, you know, it has to, yeah, it's food or drink, and we're all very familiar with it, which is great. But yeah, to do something new and different, it has to, you know, appeal to the consumer. So the whole idea was that we wanted to develop a product which existed already, soup, but we wanted to develop fresh soup. Now, it's kind of weird to think that fresh soup didn't exist. It's ubiquitous. It's all over the place these days in lots of formats. But back in 1987, the only liquid soup was in a can. So you had to buy it in a can. And we wanted the soup, you know, less to taste of the process used to make it safe, to give it a long shelf life, which is what canning is. We wanted the soup to taste, funnily enough, of the ingredients we put into it in the first place. And that just wasn't the case. So we were, yeah, disruptors. We didn't know it at the time. It's a new word. We didn't use that terminology. But we wanted to give the consumer something we thought that would resonate with them. And you can't explain it. It's kind of like, you can't just say, describe it. You just got to do it and put it on a shelf and hope it'll work. And it was very successful. We it transformed the industry. It was a new category, all those things. But we didn't know that at the time. We were just trying to do something new we thought would appeal to consumers.
And when you were pitching it, I mean, did people think you were crazy? Did people immediately say, wow, that's a great idea?
A few people thought it was a great idea, but I think they're just being kind to us, rather than say to our face that everybody thought it was a crazy, crazy idea. You know, all of the industry basically thought it was a crazy idea. You know, all those people, all those experts who should have known better, and we were listening to it going, I wonder, are they right? You know, the food scientist told us we'd kill somebody because you have to make it safe. You know, liquid soup has to be in a can, which is a conventional wisdom, which is why it's in a can. You'll kill somebody if you don't sterilize it. And when we sold the business, you know, 10 years later, we had made 50 million cartons of soup, and to my knowledge, we hadn't killed one person. So that was proved wrong. And then the experts in the food industry said, you never get the space from the retailers. Yeah, they protect that chilled space. They put their own products in there. You're not going to put a brand in there. There was no brands in the chilled space. And the third thing is, they said the carton is a crazy idea. Milk goes in a carton. You don't put soup in a carton. Now, all those things, we could have listened to them, and they were kind of right. But that is the conventional wisdom speaking. And that, you know, if you're listening to what, you know, only ever happened in the past, you never do anything new in the future. And we wanted to do something new in the future. And we were young and tenacious, and we didn't listen. We just cracked on regardless. But we were told it wouldn't work, for sure.
I just wonder, you know, I mean, farms, whether big or small, give a lot of people their first kind of entrepreneurial experience. You can learn an awful lot, as hard as it is, from things like bad harvests or bad prices. You come through, you keep going, and you can experiment and take risks. You grew up on a small beef farm. Is it too obvious to ask you, did it in any way shape how you were in business, or did you turn your back on the farm and have to kind of train up completely separately to that?
That's a great question, and I'm often asked that. I think in the earlier part of my career, I would have said, farming and entrepreneurship have nothing to do with each other. They're so far apart from each other. But the more I think about it, the more that's not the case. I think, you know, life is very unpredictable. And life is very uncertain. And on a farm, as you say, you're open to those experiences. And entrepreneurship is all about taking advantage of uncertainty and take advantage of unpredictability and seeing an opportunity. And many businesses are born out of uncertainty. And I think also, certainly a small farm in the west of Ireland is very, you know, very practical and down to earth, and you don't suffer fools gladly. And you're not afraid of hard work. And all those things are great benefits for setting up your own business and going into business. And I think you're also, you know, you've got to deal with adversity. And you know, adversity comes in all sorts of shapes and forms. And I remember, you know, maybe one anecdote I can tell you about, you know, my dad had this farm in Roscommon. And I remember 1970 is my earliest memory, a long, long time ago. I was a little six-year-old. And next to the farmyard, or next to the farmhouses, is this wonderful field that I used to play in. And we used to put the calves out to after grass. And they used to be normally frolicking around. And one day my dad brought me into the field, and this was not that unusual. And he used to whistle as you walked the land. This day he wasn't whistling, and there was no movement in the field, although the calves were in there. And as we got closer and closer, I realized, oh my God, there's calves here, right? But they're all like either dying or dead, and they're lying there with this horrible kind of bloated stomachs and legs stiff, pointing up into the air. And it was a huge shock for me. And apart from, of course, this was going to be a disaster for the family business and the finances, which I didn't really understand at the time. It was a huge shock. And this terrible death was visiting a place which I, you know, called home, which is next door. I remember asking my dad in a very innocent way, Dad, these calves are all dead. Are we going to die too? And he just looked at me and said, no, this is not a good place to be, but we're just going to buy some more calves and we'll be all right. And I just felt a huge relief, you know,
a huge business lesson going.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there are things outside your control you can't deal with. And life is full of adversity and it's going to keep throwing at you. And you just need, you know, if you're going to set up a business, it's a great lesson to learn. But as a six-year-old, it's even better. You know, you grow up with that feeling and nothing can prepare you for that feeling. I don't think you can. You know, that's my story. Other people have different stories. But that little story, a little anecdote stuck with me. I'm still talking about it now, many, many years later.
And on your website.
That's the sort of thing farming gives you.
Yeah, on your website. Beside the section in your timeline where you tried to break into the American market with your soup business, which was not successful, you have two words. You say it failed. You lost money and you got out of it then. I mean, that presumably you knew then to cut and run and not to continue in that business in America. It was a very different situation to the success that you had in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, that was very much a down point. You know, there was kind of like a valley of darkness there for sure. And I guess sometimes it happens to people, but they don't have a success beforehand. So even that juxtaposition, that comparison was there, you know, setting up a new category, doing fresh soup, trying to do the same thing in the US. You know, how difficult can it be? Well, the answer in hindsight was very difficult. It didn't work. And I think you have to be honest with yourself and say that you know, it failed. Because you can try and couch it up and, oh, we got a lot right, which we did, but not enough right to make it successful. And I think, you know, I went out there saying to everybody, investors and staff and retailers, follow me, I know what I'm doing, pointing to what happened in London, which is a success, a new idea. We went out there and we did it. And then we're going to do the same in the States. And it didn't work. So it was kind of a feeling of let everybody down and it wasn't able to do what I said it was going to do. So the thing about that is, though, Ella, is failure is a great lesson. You know, success is a lousy teacher, but failure, it's not a great place to be. But actually, if you have the wherewithal to look back on it, it's a good place to have been because it hurts like hell. And it kind of galvanizes you to, certainly galvanize me, to swear that you're never going to have to feel that pain again. And there's a bit of redemption involved, so I don't want to overemphasize it. But, you know, you're sitting there thinking, crikey, what went wrong? And it's all down to me. But it galvanizes you to never feel that pain again.
Looking ahead.
And I think, you know, I would say a lot of the time, my third business was a success because my second one was a failure. So
this
I think
was the toddler's okay to business. Fail. Yeah. I mean, looking ahead, I just wonder, and it's an obvious point that food will always be a safe bet because people have to eat. But if you look at the use of things like weight loss drugs like Wegovy and Ozempic, how much will they disrupt the food industry? I know Morgan Stanley estimates that by 2035, which isn't that long away, 24 million people in America will be on these drugs, which means that they're going to be cutting their calories and they're going to be eating differently. Is this an area that food businesses in Ireland should be looking at?
That's a crazy statistic when you think about it. It is just over the hill, isn't it? Well, to answer your question, I'm never a great believer or a great fan of like what I call is like the pill solution. Take a pill and it'll solve the problem. I think we have to be more disciplined. However, we've been saying this for years, you know, and it's not enough to say to blame the consumer for the obesity epidemic. I think they take their fair share of it. But the food industry has been complicit. And we've been talking about, you know, the food industry changing its ways for decades. But there's such a lot of self-interest to producing these sort of products which encourage obesity, you know, basically ultra-processed foods and calorie-dense foods, and they're cheap. That's why the food industry loves it and make high margins. So that's a kind of a, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy. And if this, you know, these sort of GLP drugs or this sort of thing forces the food industry to not produce and not market those sort of, you know, unhealthy products, it forces them to look at, because they're very cheap alternatives, focuses them to look at generating and marketing and really bringing to market healthier alternatives, then that's a good thing. Mm. Now, there are lots of questions about this. I don't know what the long-term side effects of these drugs would be, and nobody has the epidemiological test to point to that, to say they're safe. We don't know. We might be creating a can of worms here. But the food industry really needs an impetus, because all that's going to happen is such a lot of self-interest here to continue to produce these products because you make money out of them, a lot more money than healthy products. And that's the reality of the situation. So if something forces them to address this, that, you know, probably is not a bad thing.
Well, it's been a very successful career you've had. I'm very grateful for you for joining us this morning from Munich. And if you want to know more about John or contact him, you can go to johnstapleton.eu. John, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Ellie, you're very welcome. Love to speak to you. Thanks for having me on.
Take care.